You are now locked into the worldwide 20 megabit beacon of truth, hope, and justice, otherwise known as your weekly dose of the Crimson Pill. I, your host, the great and all-powerful Antonin Fiori, just make sure you don't peek behind the curtain, folks, encourages you to unfasten your seatbelts and turn on all portable electronic devices as we embark on the maiden voyage of the USS Crimson Pill. Our course has been charted for the Isle of Light by way of the Straits of Knowledge and the Sea of Tranquility. In the event of turbulence, the captain reminds you that your seat cushion is no substitute for an open mind. If you are seated in an exit row, you are now invited to move forward to our first-class cabin of truth at any time. Ladies and gentlemen, on BBSRadio.com, welcome to the maiden voyage of the Crimson Pill. I am Antonin Fiori, your host, proudly at your service. The Crimson Pill is a program where we will introduce a wide range of topics that are pertinent to the day. And we'll do so by utilizing the skills, the expertise, the countless hours and years of work, dedicated research by a host of so many experts on these topics. Today we're very privileged to have as our first guest on the inaugural episode, Mr. Jordan Maxwell. For most of the BBS radio listening audience, our first guest needs no introduction, but for folks who may be new to the subject matter or to the station, Jordan Maxwell continues as a preeminent researcher and independent scholar in the field of occult and religious philosophy. His interest in these subjects began as far back as 1959. His work exploring the hidden foundations of Western religions and secret societies creates enthusiastic responses from audiences around the world. He has conducted dozens of intensive seminars, hosted his own radio talk shows, guested on more than 600 radio shows, written, produced, and appeared in numerous television shows and documentaries, including the internationally acclaimed Ancient Mystery series, all devoted to the understanding of ancient religions and their pervasive influence on the world affairs today, all around us, headlines of the papers every day. His work on the subject of secret societies, both ancient and modern, as well as their symbols, has fascinated audiences around the world for decades. Considering the rapidly moving events of today and the very real part that hidden religious agendas play in our modern war-torn world, these controversial subjects are not only interesting to explore, but far too important to ignore, ladies and gentlemen. His extraordinary presentations include documents and photographs, as well as DVDs, filled with information seldom seen elsewhere. Listening audience, it's my pleasure to welcome to the program Mr. Jordan Maxwell. Mr. Maxwell, hello to you. Good day, sir. How are you?
Well, fine. Thank you for allowing me to be with you today.
It's a privilege for us to have you with us, Mr. Maxwell. We thank you for your availability on such short notice also. And can you tell us, maybe kick us off here to start the program, what's interesting for you these days? Where are your lines of research leading you at this time?
Well, if anyone has been following what I've been doing for the last 50 years, it's really an incredible journey into the dark side of the world that we live in. And I've been saying for many years, and even more so is it true today, that nothing in the world works the way you think it does. Nothing that appears to you in this world is what you think it is. And banks are not what you think they are. Governments don't do what you think they do. You know, the police department isn't there to do what you think it does. Nothing works the way you think it does. It's a whole undercurrent of knowledge and wisdom that's been hidden from the people. And most people around the world, because I've traveled extensively and I talk to people all over the earth, and most people realize that there's some kind of a hidden agenda or some kind of a hidden or a secret system by which the world works, but nobody understands it. But everyone knows there's something going on that keeps everything moving, keeps business operating, keeps wars going, and it seems to be organized, but it's chaotic. And so most people understand that there are strange things going on in the world, and they don't have any control over it, and they don't understand it, but they know there's something going on. Well, I've known for many, many years that there is a hidden operation or a hidden hand behind world events, and I've been looking at that for over 50 years, and I'm fascinated with how much people don't know about religion, about government, about banking, about everyday life. Nothing works the way you think it does. I mean, that's a place where we could start. And if you want to get into particulars, it's up to you.
Well, Mr.
That's
Maxwell,
the basis for what I do.
I absolutely agree with each point that you've made thus far. And in fact, this program will be built around attempting to shine light on and disclose a great number of those topics that you briefly touched upon thus far. I'm curious, you had mentioned just a moment ago, nothing is what we really think it is. Now, a portion of our radio audience is familiar with your body of work, but for those who are relatively new to the subject matter, could you give us some of these everyday examples, things that people might step outside or make a trip to the grocery store and be able to pick up on about how this world has been pulled over our eyes, so to speak?
Yes, well, you know, we know about gang graffiti. Drive through the poor areas of Los Angeles, and you'll see graffiti sprayed on walls, and it's replete everywhere. But while it looks like just vandalism, actually, graffiti by these gangs are actually telling you something. They are symbols marking off territories. They are symbols that are marking off different organizations and different groups. And so if you don't understand the colors, if you don't understand the symbols, you think it's just vandalism. In point of fact, it's more than that. It's an actual communication to the world of who is living in that area, who's controlling that area's drugs or crime or whatever. And that's the same way the world works. I mean, you go from one country to another, and you need to understand the symbols, the words, the colors that the people use, the national coats of arms, the flags. Flags have certain colors. That's why, you know, when you have a friend that you thought you understood, and one day you find out that there's a whole different person than you thought he was, you say, well, he showed his true colors. Well, it's because colors, sounds, symbols, emblems, words and terms, all of this is communication between humans, communication. And so once you realize that there's a hidden world of communication throughout the earth, and that there are certain standards of communication, certain symbols that are used by organizations, like on a worldwide scale, for instance, the swastika that was used by Adolf Hitler was the same swastika that was used by the Hindus and Buddhists for different reasons, but there were symbols that mean something to people. And so I've just been looking at these symbols and words and terms and flags and coats of arms and heraldry and corporate logos and presidential seals and that kind of thing, beginning as far back as 1959, I began to become very interested. I mean, I was even interested in such things when I was a young kid. I did very bad in school. I was probably one of the worst students of my time in school. I hated school. I couldn't stand being in school. It was like a prison to me. And as soon as I would get out of school, I immediately went to the library and started reading for myself. I didn't want to buy into what was being handed out at school, because I could see where civilization was going, even in my little town.
Sure.
And so I always thought out of the box, so to speak. I was always wherever. I had a rule of thumb that guided me in my life. Wherever the crowd was going, I would go the opposite way, just on principle. So if everyone was going to the ball game, I would go somewhere else, totally different, just on general principles. I don't want to go where the mob goes. I don't want to go where the people go.
Sure.
I want to go that's where no one goes. I want to know the things which nobody seems to know. I want to look at the subjects that nobody deals with. And in order to do that, you've got to be on your own and by yourself, and you're going to pay a price for it. Because if you don't go along to get along, you're going to pay a very dear price in this world for the kind of knowledge you're looking for.
Absolutely. We cannot expect to drink the water that we do not pull from the well.
That's right. And you're going to pay for it. And this kind of knowledge you're going to pay for, because what you're doing is you're now delving into what has been referred to as the dark side. And believe me, there is a dark side to humanity. There is a very dark side to government, to banking, to the way religion works.
And there are forces and powers that be behind the scenes that don't necessarily want us to learn some of that information.
Boy, you got that right. I mean, knowledge is power. And the whole idea has always been, for as long as man's been on the earth, is to make sure that the people, generally speaking, the people have no power. That's what tyrants and politicians and religious leaders want. They want to make sure that the people do not know anything. Make sure the people are ignorant, ill-informed, keep them occupied with alcohol, drugs, entertainments, television, sex, drugs, music, anything. Just give the people something to occupy them. That's what adults do when they are, when a group of adults get together, they let the children go out and play. So always, let the kids go out and play. Why? Because we don't want the children and the infantiles to hear what the adults are talking about. So send the kids out to play ball. So I've never learned how to play ball. I don't play ball with anybody. I want to know who the people are who are guiding the destiny of my country and guiding the destiny of the human race. I'm not interested in playing ball. I'm not a team player. And consequently, I've learned, even in my early teen years, that there is a whole system in operation behind the world scene. It's a criminal system, a criminal enterprise. It's called government, religion, banking. Those are the three foundation stones of Western civilization, is government, money, and religion. All three operate together. You can't have one without the other two. So understanding that, you get into what I call the occult side of world government. The word occult simply means hidden. That's all it means. It has been applied and misunderstood to be something evil. When you use the word occult, most Christians will feel that this has to do with the devil or something. No, it has to do, look it up in a dictionary, the word occult simply means hidden. And I am saying that the wisdom of this world has been purposely hidden from you. It's on a need-to-know basis, and the powers that be figure you don't need to know. So all you need to do is keep track of the basketball score and the fact that the Dodgers are playing tonight, and the cold beer and entertainment and what's on television, and those are all distractions to make sure that you are happy and you're pacified like a child. While the adults are running the earth behind the scenes that you know nothing about.
That's right. And yet, in these past few years, the events that are happening in each of those three aspects that you described, government, money, and religion, the headlines we're finding daily in the papers, the unexplainable acts of evil that are being committed by not only our world leaders of governments, but also we're finding in religion as well, I think these events are helping some people begin to awaken and realize that maybe American Idol and that cold beer on the with the ball game isn't what should be my highest priority right now.
Boy, they got that right. You know, you know, people are beginning to feel the effects of the corruption, but you know, they don't know where it's coming from. All they know is that the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. And it's right. becoming overwhelmingly obvious that some evil force is in control of the world. Goodness and decency is just about dead on the earth. And that good people, you know, like the old saying, you know, good guys finish last. So why is it that evil continues to perpetuate itself and grow while honesty and decency is dying on the earth? And so people are beginning to realize that, but they have no idea in the world how any of this stuff really works. And unfortunately for me, I have discovered that, I'll let you in on a secret that I've discovered over the years, is that people will always support what they want to hear. They will not support what they don't want to hear. I mean, if you like country western music, you're not going to pay large sums of money to go see an opera. Or if
yes.
if you like the big band or big classical music, you're not going to pay money to go see an acid rock concert.
Exactly.
So people will pay money and support what they want to hear, what they want to eat, what they want to see. They will not support what they don't want to eat and what they don't want to see. And so the one thing that has been proven around the world for thousands of years, the one thing, generally speaking, people do not want to see is truth. They're not interested in truth. They're interested in being entertained, titillated and excited by movies, by sex, by drugs, by rock and roll, by music, by entertainment. That's what the human mind wants. It wants to be entertained.
Quite right.
So people are not interested, generally speaking, in truth. Real, legitimate, hard, provable truth is something that the world is not interested in.
And Mr. Maxwell, I'm hoping that in this next half hour we can actually dive a little deeply into a few examples of these subjects. For those of us who have joined us midstream, we're 18 after the hour on bbsradio.com. You're listening to The Crimson Pill with Antonin Fiori, and our guest today is internationally recognized lecturer and researcher Jordan Maxwell. Mr. Maxwell, The Crimson Pill is launched from the heart of America's breadbasket. And here in this region of the country, we know that we have folks from Missouri, the Show Me States. So I'd like to give one or two tangible examples for those folks. And I'm thinking that perhaps a good place to start is one of the first pieces that I've heard from your research in the past that caught my attention. And it's something that anyone can reach into their purse or their pocketbook and grab their checkbook and have an example of how the powers that be can sometimes almost lead us astray with the fine print that we don't even know is there. Care to comment?
Yeah, well, that's what the attorneys will tell you. You know, if you're going to sign a contract, you better read the fine print. And before you sign on the dotted line, I mean, I grew up hearing that. You know, before you sign on the dotted line, read the fine print. Where does that come from? What does that mean? Well, if you look on a check, any good check, if you have a checkbook, look at the check. And where you sign your name on the bottom looks like a line to sign your name on. In point of fact, it is not a line. Look at it very closely. Get a magnifying glass and look at it. It is dotted line. It's not a solid line. It's a line of dots. And that's what you're doing. You're signing on the dotted line. Well, look at those dots. They're not dots. Get a magnifying glass and you will see they're letters. It's telling you something that you're signing on. You think you're signing on a line on a check. No, get a magnifying glass and look at the line you're signing on and you will see it's telling you something. You're signing on the dotted line, but you're not, quote, reading the fine print. So look at any check where you sign with a magnifying glass and you will see that it's telling you something. It's telling you basically that when you sign this piece of paper, with your name, that you are accepting your, you are giving your name as a signature, and that you are thereby being responsible to follow through now on maritime admiralty laws. And most people have no idea about any of this. They just sign a check, never realizing for a moment what you're doing when you sign your name. There's a world of difference between signing your name and signing a signature. Signature is not signing your name. Any good attorney will explain to you the difference between just signing your name and signing your name as a signature. The word signature is why we have a signatory to a document. Signatory or signature means that when you write your name on a document, you have read the entire document and you are in absolute, total, 100% agreement with the document that you are signing. Therefore, you, when you sign it, it is considered to be your signature. You are a signatory to a document. But when but that's just not writing your name. No, you are a signature because you are agreeing with everything on the paper you're signing. So that's why when police stop you, and cops will stop you, and are you know, anytime you come in contact with government, they'll say, well, give me your name. That's very important. When someone says, well, give me your name, no, I will not give you my name. I will tell you my name, but I will not give you my name. Most people are so ill-informed and unread that they don't see that there's a very big difference between giving your name to someone or telling them your name.
Precisely.
But in a federal court, that's when you find out you said the wrong thing, when the judge says, give me your name, or an attorney says that in a courtroom. So there are little things that people don't realize about law. And ignorance of the law is no excuse. You need to do your homework. You need to open your mind for the first time, because your mind is, your brain is like a parachute. It doesn't work if it's not open.
Quite right.
You need to open up your mind and begin to understand that words and terms are very important. Symbols mean things. When you go to courthouse, the symbols on the courthouse, the symbols in the courtroom. I mean, why do you have a gate and a fence in a courtroom? Why do the people sit on one side and the judge sits on the other? All of this is very, very important. Symbolism. If you don't understand it, you're going to jail. You're going
Quite
to jail
right.
because you're using the wrong words at the wrong time. You don't understand the symbols. You have no idea in the world how law really works. So all I'm saying is a whole world of knowledge that people just do not have. And that's why, you know, it's been said that knowledge is power. And that's why Americans are feeling they are powerless. They have no real power to do anything. Why? Because you have no knowledge of how things work. Knowledge is power.
Quite right, Mr. Maxwell. Very interesting points along the way, and I can almost sense some borderline skepticism from anyone who's new to this subject matter. I've heard the words phrased in conversation before, that they think that some of these points are maybe nothing more than mincing words or small minutiae. And yet I would ask the listening audience, if they have not already made a note of one of the terms that you've shared thus far, that term is maritime admiralty law. Could you care, Mr. Maxwell, to tell us just a bit more about maritime admiralty law, its ramifications and pertinence in our everyday lives?
Yes, there are two things on the earth. The ancient peoples of the world, the ancient Romans and the ancient Greeks and the ancient peoples of the world, especially Rome, codified all of this stuff. Roman law is the basis for American law. We are the modern-day Rome. And if you understand ancient Roman law, the Romans understood that there were only two things on the earth. There was land and water. Period. That's it. That's what the earth is. Land and water. And so they developed the concept in ancient Rome that there were then two kinds of law on the earth. There was the law of the land and the law of the sea. Well, we've heard the term law of the land. But most people think law of the land means the laws that we live by. No, no. Go back and get an education and understand that when you use the word law of the land, it's in opposition to a different law, which is law of the sea, the law of water. So the law of the land is the law that governs a particular people that live on land. And so the law of the land is different in every country. You can do things in America you can't do in Russia. You can do things in China you can't do in South Africa, because the custom of the people on the different pieces of land on the earth is different. And so the law of the land is different for every country. You have to understand the customs and the laws of the people that you visit. So
quite
that's
right.
The law of the land. Now, the law of the sea is referred to as the law of maritime admiralty, maritime admiralty, which is the law of water. That's why the admiral of the navy. And we get the word navy from the body of a church. The body of a church, the main body of any church is called a nave, N-A-V-E. And since all of our churches operate on the maritime admiralty law, all churches operate on the maritime admiralty law. Now that doesn't sound very important if you don't understand how the world works, but that becomes absolutely frightening when you begin to understand how religion operates on the earth today on the maritime admiralty.
Absolutely.
And that's why when you walk into a church, you will always see the flag of the country on the altar. Why? Because the very church, the very idea of worshiping a god falls under international maritime admiralty law. And if you don't know that, you better go back and do some homework and find out what you're doing when you go to a church or a synagogue or a or a temple of any kind, because all religion operates under maritime admiralty. And this is why when a judge walks into the court, he's operating on the maritime admiralty, the law of water. And that's why everyone rises when the judge walks in. The same reason why when the Catholic priest walks onto the altar in the church, everyone rises. It's the symbolism of maritime admiralty or the law of water. Now, that's a very big subject. I'm just giving you some basic concepts.
Absolutely. And I'm so glad that you made the distinction between the law of the land and the law of the sea, because I think that today most Americans are, well, they've fallen under the misconception that the law of the land in the United States is the Constitution.
Yeah.
When in actuality, there's quite a distinction between our Constitution and the maritime admiralty law, the statutory law that we really are subjected to for 99% of the course of our interaction with government.
That's
isn't
right.
that right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I would say 100%, because maritime admiralty is the law of water. That's why when you go into a court, you will see the fence and a gate, and the people set out on one side of the fence, and on the inside is the judge and the court. And so there's a gate that you have to pass to go into before the judge. Well, that gate is referred to as a water gate. It's a gate like is used in the canal zone. When a ship goes through the Panama Canal, they have to open the gates, the water gates. And so when your name is called in a court, you walk up and you put your hand on the gate and you open it up to go in. But what you don't realize is that you are on one side of the fence because you are under, the people sitting in the audience are under the law of the land. But once you put your hand on that gate and open the floodgate, you are now opening yourself up to, you yourself put your hand on the gate, so you are opening yourself up to the law of maritime admiralty, the law of water. So now we say that you are now in hot water.
Yes.
And someone's going to have to bail you out. Like any any boat that's taking on too much water or has got too much water has to be bailed out. And because your body is 90% water and you're a biological battery and you're in hot water, if you can't get bailed out, then you're going to be put inside of a battery or a cell. And so once you begin to understand how your body, your electrical body, and the 90% water of your body is part of the system of maritime admiralty, and how you are put into a cell, how your body, your very flesh and blood body, which most Americans have never heard, your very flesh and blood body is on the New York Stock Exchange. Your body is being bought and sold on the New York Stock Exchange. Now, I realize that when I start talking about a subject that I've studied for 50 years, while most people have never even heard of this for 50 minutes, we're going to have a problem with something called cognitive dissonance.
Yes, sir.
Meaning, when you begin to hear something you've never heard before, obviously that subject and that person telling you must be crazy because you've never heard it before.
Right.
Well, that's ludicrous on the face of it to think that if you haven't heard something, then it must be crazy because you've never heard of it. But I can guarantee you that I don't care how smart you are, there's a lot of things you haven't heard.
Quite right. Quite right. And in fact, for anyone who's having a bit of cognitive dissonance just now, I would encourage you to ask yourself, how many checks have you written in the course of your lifetime, and did you realize that you had not read the fine print even one time until just now?
Yeah, you're right.
And along this course of our conversation, Mr. Maxwell, maritime admiralty law, I think a lot of Americans struggle to understand just how pervasively present the application of maritime admiralty law is in our, not just our court system, but in almost every form that we have to engage with government or law enforcement in almost any capacity. And what I had hoped to do is maybe offer an example from my research, Mr. Maxwell, and you can tell me if your research has corroborated this, but the course of maritime admiralty law making itself most present really dates back to the Civil War period, when the South seceded from the Union. Their representatives, their members of Congress, left Congress, creating a breach, creating a constitutional crisis, because from that moment forward, there was no ability to hold quorum, to have a constitutionally legal vote. And at that time, Abraham Lincoln initiated emergency powers, including martial law. Am I on the right track?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And yep. I offer an example for people to consider today. When you made the example and described to us the courtroom and the gate, thinking of some of my listeners from the Midwest, they can relate to how they had no access to casino gambling until the laws were bent to allow riverboat gambling. Mm-hmm. And at many of the locations in the Midwest, you'll find that the riverboat is tethered physically to the shore, but you have to cross the boundary onto the water in order to make that legal.
Yeah, and it was exactly right.
It was in the period of Lincoln's imposed martial law that those first military tribunals, they took that step, tethered the ship to the sea, and people facing whatever the legal matter was would cross onto the ship, but then they've brought that into the courtroom with the symbolic gate, as you described.
That's right. That's right. And that's why when you're in a court, when you go to testify, you're sitting on the dock.
That's right.
And and you're in hot water. Again, maritime admiralty is the law of water or the law of money. It's called the law of the sea, but the law of the sea is the law of money. And so that's why the law, there's water all over the earth. And so the idea being is that you can get a credit card from a bank credit card in South Africa and go to China for a vacation and live very well there with your credit card. Why? Because the credit card and money has nothing to do with the culture of the people, with the country. It has to do with banks. And where do you find banks? banks are on both sides of a river. They're called river banks. And what does a river bank do? It directs the flow of the currency, because your money is the liquid asset. It's a current. It's the ebb and flow of water. And so money goes through your hands like water. No, money is water. Money is the liquid asset, the cash flow. And once you understand that money is associated with water all over the earth, and therefore when you were born, you came out of your mother's water. So even though you may not understand this, you may never have heard this, this is the law. The law says that when you are born, you came out of your mother's water. Her water broke. Therefore, you are considered by law a maritime admiralty product. This is why all ships are female. You will always hear a captain talking of his ship, rocket ships, sailing ships, any kind of a ship. All ships are female. You will always hear the captain saying, she's a good ship, or she's seaworthy. Why are ships she? Why are they female? By law. It's because all ships deliver a product. That's why ships are on the sea, even the cruise ships. It's a business. People are paying large sums of money to go on cruises. So the cruise ships and the merchant ships, all of the ships of the world are business. It's a business. And so that's why if you buy something from a company, they will ship it to you. And this is why you have, ultimately, everything you do is dealing with money and business and maritime admiralty, so therefore you will get your product shipped to you. This is why you have a citizenship, scholarship, courtship, there's all, friendship, all kinds of the word ship appears in everything. So once you understand that the whole world of business is based on water, it's based on money. And when a ship pulls into harbor, she, because all ships are she, where she parks at, and you even hear longshoremen and people working at the docks will talk about the ships as she. Well, she parks at what is called her berth, B-E-R-T-H. A berth is where the ship sits.
Right.
And so, therefore, she is in her berth. And every item on that ship, if it's $800 million worth of Toyotas or TVs or radios, it doesn't matter. Whatever it is that the ship is bringing in, that's business. That's money. That's commerce. And therefore, she is delivering a product, like you. Your mother delivered a product. She was in the delivery room.
Interesting.
She was in labor. She was delivering a product. And if you look at your original birth certificate, where your parents signed, does not say mother or father or parent. Where your parents signed says informant. And look at the left-hand bottom of your birth certificate, and it will say this certificate is the property of the Department of Commerce. All birth certificates go to the Department of Commerce. Why? Because you are a maritime admiralty product. You are a human resource. Your body is on the New York Stock Exchange. You don't think so? Do some homework and you will find your flesh and blood body is being bought and sold on the New York Stock Exchange. How does that work? Very simple. You have to understand how the world really works, how banks actually work. Banks do not loan money. No bank has ever loaned money ever to anyone. So when you say that you're going to borrow money from the bank, you can't borrow money from the bank. Use your head and think about it. If I go in and put $100,000 into an account of my cash into a bank account, and you come in 2 days later to buy a boat that costs $100,000, and they give you my money. No, thank you. They're not giving you my money for you to go buy your boat. And if you don't pay that money back, I've lost my money. No, thank you. It don't work that way. Well, then if you go in to buy a house or buy a car or whatever, and the bank finances you, did they give you any money? Because if they gave you money, it gave you the money of people who put their money in the bank. And the laws of banking say you cannot give somebody else's money away. So how does a bank finance your car? How does the bank finance your home? Well, for sure, they're not giving you any money. That's for sure. So you need to understand that going out the gate. Banks do not loan money ever.
And I think that most folks don't realize that the real reason for that, the accuracy of your statement, is that we don't have money, we have debt. We have instruments of debt.
Well, that's different. I mean, that's a classic. Yeah, let me quickly go through that real quick. Let's say, to show you how this system works. In fact, lawfully, you cannot pay a bill in America. You cannot pay a bill in Canada. In the Western civilization, it is impossible to pay a bill. So when you hear someone saying, well, I have this bill to pay, well, that's just a word that we use. But in fact, lawfully, you will find out in a court, you cannot pay a bill. You can discharge a debt, but you cannot pay a bill. Let me give you an example. Suppose you're a painting contractor and I hire you to paint my room, to paint my office, and you give me an estimate of $100. I agree to that. This is the way it's done in commerce. And I agree to your charge. When you are through with the job, you give me a bill. When I'm through shopping, you get a bill. No matter how you're doing business, you always get a bill. So you give me a bill for painting my office. You give me a bill for $100. I reach in my pocket, pull out my wallet, and I hand you a $100 bill. Now you feel that you've been paid because I gave you $100. I give you a $100 bill.
Right.
No, I gave you a $100 bill, B-I-L-L. I gave you a bill for $100. Mm. It's called a $100 bill. Now, if you had given me a bill for $20, I'd give you a $20 bill.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why is because I have paid you. I have discharged a debt. In other words, I've given you a bill. You give me a bill for $100, I'll give you a bill for $100. Now we're even. You owe me $100, and I owe you $100, so we're even. So I, in fact, paid you nothing.
Right.
I gave you a bill back so that you owe me.
And anyone who's taken Accounting 101 or even Accounting 201 in college, the cognitive dissonance that they experience trying to wrap their minds around double-entry accounting are due to exactly this.
That's exactly right.
It's a matter of discharging debt. America, our currency is not money. It hasn't been since we abrogated the gold standard and later the silver standard.
Right.
Since the Federal Reserve Act of 1913, our currency, our instruments of debt, when you hold a dollar bill, a five, a ten, a hundred in your hand, that is an instrument of debt. It is an IOU. It is not currency.
IOU.
Yes, it has no tangible value.
Now, when a ship pulls into a harbor, like I said, it pulls in and it parks at the dock, and where it parks is called its berth. So we call her berthing a ship. She pulls in and she parks in her berth, and she's parked at the dock. Now, every single article that ship is delivering, she is delivering a product. Well, every single product, every car coming off, like $800 million worth of Toyotas, every single car has to have its own certificate of manifest.
Yes.
Because yesterday the ship wasn't here, but this morning we got a ship full of $800 million worth of Toyotas or cars or TVs or whatever, and so they have manifested out of nothing. So they have come in on water. So we're talking business, banking, money is changing hands. So when the ship pulls into harbor, it parks at its berth, and every single item has to have a certificate of manifest. It has to, on that certificate, we have to know how much does it weigh, what color was it, does it have two doors or four doors, does it have air conditioning or not. All the vital statistics of that particular item must be on that certificate of manifest.
Right.
Is why? Because it's because the ship is sitting in her berth. So therefore,
yes,
she is delivering a product, and you have to know what is that product, how much does it weigh, what color is it, etc., and how much does it cost. And so when you were born, your mother delivered you, and therefore you have to have a birth certificate. It's a Maritime Admiralty Certificate of Manifest, and you are now considered a Maritime Admiralty product, so you have to have a birth certificate, and it has to be signed by the dock, because that's where the ship is sitting, at the dock. So the dock signs your birth certificate, and now you are a Maritime Admiralty product, can be put on the New York Stock Exchange, and your body is a security for a commercial endeavor called the United States Corporation. It's a very, very interesting, dark, and deep subject that only a handful of people are privy to know about, and those people who have been trained to understand the occult or hidden significance of the monetary, governmental, and religio-political system. And that's why most Americans have never heard any of this. They have no idea in the world what you're talking about. Why? Because
right.
You don't know how the world works.
That's quite right. But fortunately for the world, Mr. Maxwell, we have folks just like yourself who are waking people up each and every day, increasingly growing numbers, and in particular here in America. Ladies and gentlemen, it's 48 minutes after the hour on BBSRadio.com. You're listening to The Crimson Pill and our distinguished guest, Mr. Jordan Maxwell. Mr. Maxwell, I can imagine that a lot of folks in our listening audience would be interested to learn how this Maritime Admiralty Law came to turn the corner and make its presence so replete here in the States. And it's interesting because, as you mentioned originally, it's an extension. Its origination point is from Roman law, and that's quite an expanse of time to cover. And I think that we might be able to do that in our conversation coming up. It's one topic I'd like to explore. And I'd also like to be sure we have a chance to talk a little bit more about some of these symbols and some of the meaning behind these symbols, the occult origination of these meanings that are around us every day. Originally, when we talked, Mr. Maxwell, we had talked about this first hour of the program, and if your schedule should permit, I know you're quite busy preparing for your upcoming lectures and working on your new projects. We do have time available if you could join us and stay with us into the second hour to explore a couple of these topics.
Well, let's say I'll stay for a half hour into the
excellent
new program.
Excellent. Very good. Very good. What I would like to do, if we could, is turn our topic again to some of the subject matter, the symbolism that's all around us. And again, with the Crimson Pill originating from the heart of the American Midwest, there's an organization, a youth organization, that's known as the Future Farmers of America, or National FFA, that can provide one example of some of the symbolism. Do you mind, Mr. Maxwell, if I make a quick quote from
absolutely.
At one point in the opening ceremonies, the advisor of the chapter is asking the vice president to describe why it is that the president of the organization or the chapter is stationed at the rising sun. And the passage is as follows. The rising sun is the token of a new era in agriculture. If we will but follow the leadership of our president, we shall be led out of this darkness of selfishness and into the glorious sunlight of brotherhood and cooperation. Now, with your long record of research and background, I'm sure you can immediately recognize that we have numerous occult symbols and meanings
one era. That's absolutely in your face. It's an affront to your education. That quote is just it's pregnant with overwhelming symbolism to someone who has studied the occult world of symbols and words and terms. That's almost scary to me. I mean,
yes, sir.
It's so overwhelmingly in your face.
How about if we digest it a little bit? Could we start with just the simple term, the rising sun? Can you tell us a bit about the history, significance, and implications of that symbol alone?
Well, as I said, the three cornerstones of power in the Western world, in the world of the West, there are three basic concepts and cornerstones of power. One is religion, the other is banking, and the other is government. Our government is based on the Roman system. Our banking is based on the Jewish system. And our philosophies are, of course, coming from Greece. And our religions are an ancient system going all the way back to the Proto-Sumerians. Sumeria, Phoenicia, Cana, Babylonia, Akkadia, and then Egyptian, Hindu, and finally coming into the Grecian times, and then from Greece into Rome, from Rome into Europe, from Europe into America. So if you trace back and go back and take a few years to study the origins of the world of religions that we have today in the world and how they have worked together hand in hand with the banking and governmental systems of the Western world, it's an extraordinary story that will just absolutely and blow your mind when you finally see it. So many times people will look at things all their life and never realize what that thing was until one day they quietly happen by chance to be sitting quietly and looking at that same symbol they've seen all their life, and it finally dawns on them what it meant. Well, our whole system of government and banking and laws are all based on the ancient religious context and ancient religious systems coming out of the ancient world. As I said, the ancient Hindu, the ancient Babylonian, Sumerian, the ancient Egyptians. And once you understand that our religious systems and our governmental systems in America and in Europe have come from the ancient world, and then you begin to see that the more we change, the more we stay the same. We're still doing the same thing the ancient Romans were doing. We still believe the same concepts that the ancient Babylonians and Sumerians and the Phoenician Canaanites and Egyptians believed. That's the same thing we believe today. It's our religions today. But it's been given to us in a different form, with different words in our language, so we don't make the connection. But once you begin to see the connection, you will see that the more we change on this earth, the more we stay the same. Americans today are still, even our very government is a Roman government. Our government is based on ancient Rome. If you go back into history, you will see that when Caesars ruled Rome as dictators, as emperors and dictators. I've been through all of Europe, and I've been to these places, and the history books will tell you that Caesar ruled Rome from something called Capitoline Hill. It was referred to where Caesar's seat of power, where Caesar actually ruled Rome from, was called Capitol Hill. And it was understood that in the morning when Caesar would officiate over the Roman Senate, he had to, quote, go up on the hill, end quote, go up on the Capitoline Hill. And so it was said in the ancient Roman Empire that Caesar went up on the hill. Why? So that he could officiate over the Roman Senate on Capitol Hill. Well, we still have Capitol Hill. We still have the Senate. We still have Roman laws, which have been translated into our English, but they're all based on ancient Roman laws, and Roman laws are based on the old ancient Phoenician Canaanite laws and our banking system. I mean, once you understand how all of this works, it will absolutely shock you. A classic example, why do you have to go to court? Well, we're always worried about having to go to court. You play basketball on a court.
Mr. Maxwell, I apologize to interrupt, but we're coming to the top of the hour, and I'd like to pick up just where you have left off there when we return. For our listening audience, we need to let you know, here on our inaugural voyage of the Crimson Pill, we have begun our broadcast on bbsradio.com, station number one. We will now be switching to station number two for hour number two. And joining us again in overtime will be internationally recognized lecturer and researcher Jordan Maxwell to pick up our conversation about how it is that you are living in what is not far removed from a fascist empire. How could we have shifted from the United States Republic to the U.S. Empire in much the same way that the Roman Republic fell? Folks, make sure you come back. Join us on BBS station number two at the top of the hour. We're going to switch to some music here with a brief interlude, and we'll be back in just a few minutes on station number two.
He is the creator and sustainer of all the worlds. Of all the worlds. Worlds. What worlds? Worlds. All the worlds. Creator and sustainer of all the worlds, whether those worlds are known or unknown to mankind.
And we're back for hour number two of the Crimson Pill here on bbsradio.com. We welcome back the listening audience, and we are very, very proud and privileged to have with us today internationally recognized author, lecturer, and teacher, Mr. Jordan Maxwell. Mr. Maxwell, before we pick up where we left off with our interview, the one thing I'd like to be sure we have a chance to discuss is how folks can learn more about your current work and also some of the information that you have available.
Well, just go to my website. It's jordanmaxwell.com. Very simple. Jordan is like the river, J-O-R-D-A-N, jordanmaxwell.com. And a lot of stuff on there. Most people go and they'll see the home page, but they don't scroll down. They don't go to the research area. You know, there's a lot on my website, and it's going to be changed very soon. And a lot more is going on, so you need to go all through my website because I have a lot of stuff there that you will never see if you don't go through it. Like on the top of the page, you'll see a button that says Research. Go to that, and it will open up a whole world of research material that you didn't even know existed. I have a lot of links on the links page. So if you're interested in this subject that we're talking about now, about law and governments and banks and how this stuff works, go to my links page and scroll down on the links page till you come to Commerce and Law. Commerce and Law on my links page, and read some of those, go to some of those websites. That one, the first two especially, the first two or three are very, very important websites, not mine, but other people's websites that I consider to be very important. And they will explain to you in minute detail what I'm just giving you concepts of. On my links page, scroll down to Commerce and Law and read it all. You'll see what I'm saying. You'll understand better once you read it yourself.
And I can provide a personal testament to that, having spent literally hours following link after link, story after story through that route. And I want to remind our listening audience that, folks, in our conversation here today, Mr. Maxwell and I are limited to try to convey to you literally thousands of pages and books and hours worth of content and information. We're trying to reduce this to bullet points for the sake of covering a lot of real estate in a very short amount of time. Please do, at your leisure, with your available time, follow these links, pursue this research. Don't take our word for anything. Be a Gnostic. Choose to know rather than merely to believe. And as a final testament that I would make as well, about a month ago, I purchased some DVDs from JordanMaxwell.com in the store section. And folks, if any of you are like myself and my loved one who have attended some of these conferences, whether it's MUFON or Conscious Living or the UFO Congress, for a fraction of the cost of attending those types of conferences, you can have literally hours of very detailed discussion on this information. And in particular, what I find most intriguing about Mr. Maxwell's work is the thoroughness that each subject is documented with a wide variety, a rich array of sources, whether it's from Black's Law Dictionary, the King James Version of the Bible, or a thousand references in between. Each of these points are quite well documented. So while cognitive dissonance may be attempting to cloud your thoughts at this moment, please know there's an awful lot here to follow up and to document. Isn't that right, Mr. Maxwell?
Yes, very much so. I've been doing this over 50 years, and I've amassed an enormous amount of information that most people are not even aware exists. And so it's been very difficult for me to try and break through the training that people have had to not think, period. Americans especially have been trained and brought up and raised to understand that there's nothing important that you don't know. You know everything there is to know about everything, and all you need to do is just go out and go do your job and get a job and pay your bills and pay your taxes, and you can be entertained and never realizing for a moment that your human life is on the stock market in New York City, and that your very country and your very existence on the earth is owned and controlled by powerful institutions and powerful people in the world that you don't even know exist. So again, knowledge is power, and that's why Americans feel powerless, because they have no knowledge. I'm trying the best I can with what I have to work with to explain to people, wake up and understand how the world works. Someone is trying to help you, to educate you. This is a very difficult job to do, is to confront people with information they've never heard before.
Exactly.
Knowing full well that most people are not going to believe what you're saying because they've never heard this discussion ever.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So, when we go back to this idea of going to a court, why do you go to court? Well, because you play basketball on a court. You play tennis on a court. How do you play tennis on a court? You play with a racket. And when you begin to understand words and terms that are used in courts and used in commerce, as a matter of fact, look up the very word commerce in a law dictionary. even a regular dictionary, but look it up in a law dictionary, the word commerce, because you think that means business. No, you better go back and do your homework. Go to a law dictionary, look up the word commerce. Commerce is translated as sex. Sex is considered by law commerce. And therefore, look up the word Congress. You like to talk about the Congress of the United States and the congressman? Well, look up the word Congress. You will see that Congress, again, itself means sex. So both commerce and Congress are terms, are sexual terms. Look it up in a law dictionary. Read it yourself. And this is when, so as I said, why do you go to court? It's a game. It's called the commerce game. It's a game. And then when, like any other game, you have two teams. You have one team of lawyers, one team, and the whole idea of the game is to put the ball back in the other guy's court. So you dance all around, one team dances all around, throwing the ball back in the other guy's court. Then those guys pick up the ball, and now they're going to throw the ball back in your court and throws it back at them. And so it's a game that's going on, and obviously any game you have to have a referee. So the judge is a referee. He doesn't care who wins or loses. It doesn't matter to him. Somebody is going to win and someone's going to lose, but he's going to get paid anyway, so it doesn't matter. He is there to make sure the game is played correctly. So if you do something, one team does something wrong, well then you have to forfeit a point and the other team gets to serve now because you made a mistake. So the judge is there as a referee in the game. And why we know he's a referee is because he wears a black robe. Why do judges wear black robes? Well, the same reason why when you kids graduate from high school or university, they wear a black robe. What does a black robe mean? What does it symbolize? Well, wake up and discover that a black robe represents in international maritime admiralty law. It represents something. It means something if you wear a black robe. That's why judges wear a black robe. Catholic priests wear black robes. It's an incredible symbolism right in your face, but people have no idea in the world what they're looking at. Judges wear black robes because the color black was associated with the planet Saturn. Saturn was referred to as the Lord of the Rings. Of course, Saturn was Lord of the Rings. They're still making movies in Hollywood about the planet Saturn being Lord of the Rings. And Americans and people all over the world going to movies, watching the movie Lord of the Rings, never for a moment suspecting that what they're looking at is an occult story of an ancient god called Saturn. And Saturn was to be worshipped, and his day of worship was, of course, Saturn's day, or Saturday. And this is why the Hebrews were worshippers of the planet Saturn, because they worship on Friday night to Saturday night as their Saturday, Saturn's day. And Saturn, the planet Saturn, in the old Phoenician language, in the ancient Phoenician, or what we call the ancient Hebrew, Hebrew is ancient, is actually a Phoenician language. And in ancient Hebrew or Phoenician language, the planet Saturn was referred to as Shabbat. Shabbat was Saturn. And therefore, the celebration each week of the dominance of the world by Saturn, Shabbat, was called the Sabbath. So therefore, if you keep holy the Sabbath, what you're doing is worshiping the Lord of the Rings. You're worshiping the planet Saturn. Wake up and understand where this stuff comes from. Because the more Christians and Jews are praying every day in their churches and synagogues, they're praying for God to protect them, for God to protect the world, for God's protection. and for decency and whatever. And so Christians and Jews are praying to God all day long, every day. And the more they pray to God, the worse the world gets. Evil and violence and badness and wars and bloodshed and all of the filth and degeneracy is growing. It's getting worse and worse every day. So the question has to be asked, if all the Christians are praying to God, all the Jews are praying to their God, why is it that the world is getting worse by the day? Where is their God? Well, the bottom line is that they're praying to the planet Saturn. And once you understand that that the very foundations of Western religion are based on the old astronomical or astrological concepts coming out of India, coming out of Egypt, Sumeria, Babylonia, Phoenicia, Cana, the old Akkadian religion, it's an extraordinary story of ignorance, ill-informed, unread ignorance that people are crawling on their knees and praying to pagan gods, never realizing that they have totally missed their connection with the divine one that we call God. You know, the real God is not one of the planets. It's something that is it's a presence in the universe of a very highly intelligent, powerful, intellectual presence in the universe that men have called God. But the ancient peoples attributed godship to the planets.
Quite right.
And so the Hebrews were worshipers. You know, we're told that the Hebrews were the first monotheistic people on the earth, the first worshipers of one God. No, in point of fact, if you're educated, and most people in this subject aren't educated, but if you were, you would understand, no, go back to the reference books and go back to the library, and you will see that the Hebrews were not the first monotheistic people. Monotheistic means the worshipers of one God.
Mm-hmm.
The ancient Hebrews were Heno. It's spelled H-E-N-O. Go to a library, get a reference book, and look up the word H-E-N-O. Henotheistic. The Hebrews or the Jewish people were henotheistic, not monotheistic. Henotheistic means picking one God from a group. Picking one from a group. So we for illustration, say you have 15 gods standing in a row, and you pick one particular god to be your God, and you make a contract with that God, and he will become your God, and you will become his follower. Now you are said to be the worshiper of one God. Well, in a point of fact, yes, you are the worshiper of one God, but there is not one God, there's 15. You
yes.
just picked one.
Right.
Therefore, you are not the worshiper of a monotheistic worshiper of one God. You're a henotheistic, meaning you picked one from a group.
Quite right.
And so once you understand that the Hebrew religion is a henotheistic, meaning they have picked one God from a group, well, now you need to understand what the word God means then, because God is simply dog spelled backwards in English. And this is why church teachings are called dogma. You need to really understand religion and theology and where it comes from, because the very word Theo is in Greek is a word for God. God is Theo in Greek. And so, therefore, the study of God is the study of Theo. It's called theology. And theology, or the study of God, gives us our word theater. So the theater gives us a place to worship God. And that's why we have today Motion Pictures Theater. You need to understand the connections between the ancient occult world of words and terms and in relation to this theo and theology and theater. You need to understand that the white man's world, the world of the white man, was Europe, northeast, west, and south of Europe. Incidentally, northeast, west, and south is N-E-W-S. That's where we get the word news. Comes anything comes from the northeast, west, or south is news. But if you go back to Europe and the home of the white man, so to speak, you will find that even 1,000 years before the Roman Empire, Europe had a very highly developed civilization of power in Europe. It was called a Druidic power, Druids. They were called Celtic or Celtic Druids. And the Druids were the earliest Europeans, even before the Roman Empire, the Druids existed.
Quite right.
And the Druids were the doctors, the lawyers, the priests. They were the powers of Europe. They're still around today in Europe, the Druids. Well, America is a Druid country because it came from Europe. So if you don't understand the United States being a Druid country and Druidic religion and Druidic symbols, then you don't know anything about your country. You need to wake up and find out where America came from. Now, one of the most important symbols in the old ancient Druid system in Europe, from which where we came, one of the most ancient symbols in that ancient Druid establishment was a magic wand, like Merlin the magician with his magic wand.
Yes.
And the orchestra leaders in the great halls of music, the orchestra leader has a magic wand.
Yes.
And when he waves that magic wand, you had better play the tune of his magic wand. You better follow what he is directing you to play, not what you want to play. He's the director.
Quite right.
And he's directing you with a magic wand, like Merlin the magician. He's a magical presence before the orchestra. And so magic wands were always made out of the wood of a holly tree. It's made out of Hollywood. And once you understand that the whole Druidic world system of America is based on Hollywood, and the whole motion picture entertainment educational system we call Hollywood is a Druidic system promoting a Druidic philosophy, a Druidic government, religion, banking, you just need to wake up and find out the whole world does not work the way you think it does. The entire
That's right.
world is operating on an occult or hidden foundation, and unless and until you find out how this stuff works, you're just going to be crawling on your knees from one day to the next trying to figure out how this world works, and you will never be told, you will never, as I said, the powers that be feel that this kind of knowledge is on a need-to-know basis, and you don't need to know. All you need to do is be afraid of the police, be afraid of the courts, be frightened of the powers that are over you, and just pay your bills and do what you're supposed to do and stay out of the way and don't act smart and don't go reading too many books and getting too smart.
And make sure you phone
like
in.
Everybody else and go play ball.
And make sure you phone in to vote on American Idol, right?
Yeah, and vote on American Idol and watch the dancers and famous dancers, and that's all you need to know.
Exactly, exactly. Ladies and gentlemen, at 22 after the hour, you're listening to The Crimson Pill with Antonin Fiori, and our special guest today, Mr. Jordan Maxwell. Mr. Maxwell, I find in having these types of conversations with many people that after about 5 minutes, roughly, and oftentimes not nearly that long, the eyes glaze over. And I think part of the reason for that is cognitive dissonance, as we talked
yep.
about before. And I think also part of it is that it's in an era that we live in today where we are bombarded by information from all sources at all times, I think many people, almost as a defense mechanism, we partition part of our mind and we treat things in a very rudimentary fashion just to help us be able to cope. I'll give you an example. Sometimes if you're talking about biblical issues or matters and some of the things we've actually talked about in the last few minutes, sometimes folks just create a partition in their mind that these are events and these are things that occurred in something that they generically label biblical times, you know, long, long ago in a galaxy far, far away.
Yeah.
And they fail to realize the significance and the implications that those types of issues hold in our everyday life today. I'd like to give one quick teaser before I come back to you with another question. Most Americans wouldn't realize that our entire space program is literally built upon the framework of occult knowledge, underground streams of knowledge, and also the ritual practice and observance of dates, stellar and astronomical configurations in the sky, and literally not just from the inception of our space program, our trip to the moon, but even to this very day, there are no end to the connections of occult symbolism and meanings involved even in something like that.
Boy, that's an understatement of the year. Yeah. I know quite a few astronauts personally, and I know some of the top physicists at NASA who are personal friends of mine. You're absolutely right. Most people don't know that NASA depends every day on Hindu mathematics. All of NASA operates on what is called Hindu math. And you'd be surprised how many Hindu mathematicians are the brainworks behind NASA. Mm. And where did NASA come from? That's a whole, people say, well, that's National Aeronautics Space Administration. No, go back and do your homework and find out where NASA comes from, where this whole idea of the space program comes from. That's a whole story in itself when you get into, what was his name, Aleister Crowley, the great
yes.
magician of England.
Yes,
and
as well
Ron
as
Hubbard of Scientology.
As well
and,
as when we hear when we hear the
Hubbard
term
from Scientology, Aleister Crowley.
When we hear the term NASA's
magician,
Jet Propulsion Laboratory, for example.
And Jack L. Parsons. Jack L. Parsons was a rocketeer. He was into rockets many, many years ago. He was one of the original rocketeers who believed in space flight and rockets and all that. And he worked on solid fuels for rockets and all kinds of great stuff that he was into in rocketry. Everyone knows the history of Jack L. Parsons and his work with space. And so he was, at one time, he had a big warehouse, a set of warehouses up here in Pasadena in Southern California. And it was that area where he was experimenting with rockets and explosives and all that was many years ago in Pasadena. And that area was known as Jack L. Parsons' lab. And Jack L. Parsons, who was working with rockets and all that kind of thing, had two very close friends, L. Ron Hubbard of Scientology and Aleister Crowley from England, the great satanic master, who himself called himself the Beast, the master of the Beast of 666, the great satanic master in England, Aleister Crowley. So Aleister Crowley, with his close friend L. Ron Hubbard of Scientology and Jack L. Parsons became a triumvirate. They became a threesome, and they began working on the idea that that there were aliens out in space, or demonic spirits, or whatever you want to call them, but other living entities out there in space that man could connect to and learn from and communicate with and learn from. So L. Ron Hubbard, Scientology, Aleister Crowley from England, the great master satanic magician, and Jack L. Parsons began to formulate some kind of an arrangement where they could, through sexual magic, through all kinds of occult rituals, not only develop space travel, but they could develop communication with the dark side. They could communicate with the spirits, with the aliens, with the entities of other worlds. And so that's what Scientology, L. Ron Hubbard's all about. That's
right,
what
right.
That's what NASA's all about. But what people don't know is that Jack L. Parsons' lab became known today Jet Propulsion Lab. No, not Jet Propulsion. JPL was Jack Parsons' lab. So JPL today is based on occult magic, sexual magic, child sacrifice, all kinds of dark, evil stuff that was developed in England and here in America to connect mankind with the demonic forces, with the aliens, with all kinds of secret societies, fraternal orders, doing all kinds of sexual rituals up in Pasadena. There's a whole hell of a story here that people just don't know.
How deep the rabbit hole goes, Mr. Maxwell.
People are ill-informed and unaware that when they're looking at NASA sending space shuttles into space, they have no idea of the world where this stuff has come from and how the Nazis, after World War II, were brought over here under something called Operation Paperclip, when the Vatican, but the Holy Father, the Pope in Rome, gave all the top Nazis new identification, gave them money, gave them safe passage so that the Nazis could come over to America and hook up with Jack L. Parsons and L. Ron Hubbard and Aleister Crowley and continue their great work of connecting the human race with the demonic, with the aliens, with other world entities. I'm just telling you, the whole world is not what you think it is. And that's why today, all over the earth, there's violence, bloodshed, wars, gang killings, all kinds of depravity on the earth, because the very foundations of the Western civilization you don't understand at all. This thing is very dark, it's very deep, and it's very frightening, and that's why most people can't wrap their heads around what's really going on here. You better find out what the U.S. government really is. And what NASA really is, and who runs the banks in point of fact, and what is really going on in churches, where synagogues really come from. I'm just telling you, you'd better wake up and find out and smell the roses about how the world really works.
Quite right, and just so. Folks, we're joined by internationally recognized author and lecturer Jordan Maxwell. We've been talking for a few moments about the space program, NASA, its occult underpinnings, the very personalities and folks who brought about NASA's rise in our culture, its prominence, its fame, Wernher von Braun, Jack Parsons, where their thoughts, where their motives actually originated from. Now, Mr. Maxwell, I'm hearing with my mind's eye the voice of cognitive dissonance from some of our listeners saying, but wait, NASA and what you're saying about these guys, what's the big deal? All we did was went to the moon. It's a public program. We know what they've done. There's nothing nefarious here. Shall we explore this just a little more deeply?
Well, look, there's too many books that have been written on this subject showing you the underpinnings. My point is that in the Bible, there's a scriptural concept that says, by their fruits, you shall know them.
Yes.
Very important. By their fruits, you shall know them. If somebody comes to you with a handful of seeds and ask you, what kind of seeds are these? Well, if you don't know what kind of seeds they are, all seeds are seeds. I mean, who knows what kind of seed they are? Well, the smart thing to do is plant the seed. Plant it and water it and watch what grows. And if it grows up to be an apple tree, well, then that answers your question for sure. It was an apple seed. If it grows oranges, well, then that answers that. It was an orange seed. So by their fruits you shall know them. Well, what is the fruitage of NASA? What is the fruitage of the U.S. government? What is the fruitage of our international banking system? What is the fruitage of the Vatican, of our religious churches and our synagogues and our temples? What is the fruitage? The fruitage is violence, wars, bloodshed, pornography, drug running. Our entire civilization on the earth is eaten up with violence, corruption everywhere. Doesn't that tell you that by the fruitage you will know them? Basically, what I'm saying is that the human race is on the wrong path, and we're too ignorant, ill-informed, self-centered, egotistical, stiff-necked and arrogant to understand you're on the wrong page. You're going the wrong way. You are being destroyed by people who are far, far superior to you in intelligence, who are doing things behind the scenes that you don't know anything about. I can take you to places right here in Los Angeles, right here today in L.A. I know of two places for sure where there is human sacrifices being conducted today, right now. So human sacrifices, putting children to death and rituals, is being done right now here in Hollywood today, right now in this in the modern day era. And people have no idea in the world that there are humans being put to death in rituals in Los Angeles today. And I'm saying you need to wake up and learn how the world really works, because by their fruits you shall know them. The fruitage of our civilization, look at it today. We're unemployed, people are being robbed, gangs, drive-by shootings, drugs, organized crime, corruption everywhere. That's the fruitage of our system.
Quite right.
And why? Because the people choose not to hear. People don't want to hear the truth. I'm just telling you the truth. I don't care. I'm 70 years old, and I'm not going to be here much longer. I have no family. I have no home. I have no bank account, no credit cards, no checkbook. I own no property. I have nothing, own nothing, and got nothing. I had to do that in order to be who I am and do what I do. I had to bypass all the things that normal people go after in their life so that I could pursue wisdom, knowledge, and understanding. Well, I got what I wanted. I wanted to know, so I now know. But I find myself in a country and in among people who have no idea in the world what I'm talking about, who couldn't care less, which has nothing to do with basketball or football or entertainment or anything of any real importance like Paris Hilton or anything of any importance. And therefore, I am now confronted with the fact that I see my country being destroyed, the culture of the human race being destroyed, with wars and violence and bloodshed and corruption everywhere. Our country is on drugs. Our people are religiously ignorant, ill-informed, unread. My God, the whole human race is in serious trouble, and very few people have the brains or the intellectual acumen to understand what I'm saying. Too many people are not intellectually honest. They don't want to face the truth. By their fruits you shall know them. Look at the fruitage of Western civilization. We are a mess, and we're involved in wars and violence and bloodshed all over the earth. We're killing people all over the world. We're killing ourselves. We're killing our children. We're raping and plundering the planet. And nobody seems to have been smart enough to figure out how this stuff works.
Although I think that we're fortunate.
You wake up and find out how this works. Nothing is going to get better, because you can keep praying all you want. You're praying to the wrong God.
And that's why I think that we're so fortunate, Mr. Maxwell, for your contributions and others in the field as well to help provide those building blocks, those very pieces of the truth that are necessary and required for us to understand the greater mosaic, the larger picture behind the scenes. At 37 past the hour, you're listening to The Crimson Pill with Antonin Fiore. We're joined by guest Jordan Maxwell. Mr. Maxwell, in our few remaining moments, I'd like to return to one thought, a theme that we touched on earlier, a subject that I'm certainly hopeful that at some point in the future, if your schedule allows, we could pick up the conversation and explore in greater detail. But that subject is the hidden hand behind the scenes. And for our folks who might still be trying to let cognitive dissonance convince them that they don't really need to pay attention or wake up now, I'd like to return to the subject of NASA. And ask our listening audience, how many of you are aware that NASA is not a civilian space program? It is actually, by its charter and origination, a Department of Defense program.
Right. Mm-hmm. Military.
And within the original...
That's why you have a space shuttle.
That's right.
Because a shuttle is a bus. You're taking a bus when you're leaving town.
Right, right.
And that's why you have a space station. Somebody's getting ready to... The powerful people on this planet that run the planet, and you'll never know who they are because you'll never hear their names. The Henry Kissingers and the Barack Obamas, these are all chumps. They're all paid lackeys. The real power masters on this earth, you will never know who they are. They have never been told. You will never hear their name, and you will never see them. They don't need to let you know who they are. But they are masters of the human race, and they work behind the scenes. And all the ancient scriptures of the world talked about the fact that the human race is under the control of a dark side. Even Christians will tell you that the Bible says that the whole world is lying in the power of the wicked one. What do you mean by that, the whole world is lying in the power of the wicked one? Well, in all the ancient holy scriptures of the world, not just Christianity, Judaism, but in all the ancient scriptures of the world, talk about a dark force, a dark and evil presence on the earth that is controlling the destiny of the human race. Well, you can bet on it. You can see it everywhere. No matter how hard you try, no matter what you try and do to save this country or to save civilization, it's being destroyed every day by organized corruption. It's organized crime, organized corruption. So all I'm saying is that the rich get richer, the poor get poorer, and the people continue to not see. They look with their eyes, they don't see. They listen with their ears, but they don't hear with the heart. They don't get the sense of it. So ultimately, what we're going to do is see the collapse of Western civilization and just realize that you and your children, and especially your grandchildren, are going to live in a world of concentration camps, of darkness, of evil that you cannot even imagine that's coming on the earth today. We are living in the last and final days of an old world when there's a new world coming in which there will be no more freedom, no more liberty, no more justice, no more intellectual acumen, nothing. There will only be concentration camps, prisons, and you will have to be in compliance with the Führer. You will have to be on your knees before the powers that be. And Americans have lost their country, Americans have lost their freedom, and now they're in the process of losing their minds. Why? Because they're arrogant, self-centered, egotistical, pompous, and know-it-all, and they are not humble enough to look at and wrap their minds around the truth. The truth is we've been had because we're ignorant. We've been sold a bill of goods. And unless and until you're wise enough to wake up and understand what I'm saying and start looking at the kind of thing I'm talking about, you're going to see your country, your life, your possessions, and your grandchildren are going to be living in a world that you don't even begin to appreciate how evil it's going to be.
That's quite
Hollywood
right.
Hollywood does three things. Hollywood is here to do three things. One, to tell you what the powers that be have already done, what they're doing now, and what they're getting ready to do. So all of this stuff has been told to you by Hollywood movies and television. They make movies to tell you what they're doing. They make a movie called Wag the Dog. Wag the Dog was how government officials in Washington, D.C., in the cabinet, of the presidential cabinet, develop a false war. It's called Wag the Dog. Go rent the movie. Dustin Hoffman. About how governments will develop something called a war, and they'll put the whole thing into Hollywood and shoot the whole thing on a movie set and have the people believing that there was terrorists everywhere and we're going to be destroyed by some Arabs with a bandana on his head living up in the mountains, and he's going to take over the greatest political, religio-political, monetary power in the whole world, the United States of America, the most powerful military machine on the face of the earth, and a couple of Arabs with bandanas on their head are going to hold America hostage. You've got to be out of your mind to believe that a bunch of Arabs are going to hold the most powerful nation in the world. We defeated the Germans around the world on the field of battle. We defeated the whole communist empire of Soviet Russia. We defeated every enemy that's ever come near us. And now a handful of Arabs with the bandanas are going to hold America hostage. You must be out of your mind. What is going on today is a trick. and you bought into it, the whole entire superstructure of world government and of the United States government is a lie. We've been lied to from day one. This whole idea of Al-Qaeda is bullshitter. As far as I'm concerned, this is the most incredible bunch of lies, deception I have ever experienced in my life. This is how the Roman Empire collapsed, because the people were too stupid to understand how government, banks, and religion really work. Sorry to tell you, but it's about time somebody wakes you up to tell you you've been had. Because you don't know how the world works, you don't want to know, you're not interested to learn, you don't want to hear the truth. Well, it's about time you understand that the great spirit in the universe brings certain people into the world system at a particular time when the world is in darkness, to enlighten you. So that's what I'm trying to do. I'm here to enlighten you as to what's going on and how it's being played, because your government has been lying to you from day one. We just had Obama come out and talk about how he killed Osama bin Laden. Do you realize that there has been four different announcements from four different occasions, once in 2001, when the President of the United States announced that Osama bin Laden has been killed? Then in 2002, it was announced that the military had killed bin Laden. In 2006, George Bush on the ship said, "We finally killed bin Laden," and four times he's been killed.
He keeps
four
coming back to life.
This government has come out and told the people, "Well, we finally killed bin Laden," and now Obama comes out and has the gall to say, "We finally killed." This is absolute lunacy, and the American people are so profoundly stupid. They're jumping around dancing. Nobody seems to have an education over 40 on the Richter scale. I mean, this is the fourth time the federal government has said that they killed bin Laden. Wake up. What is going on here? I mean, I'm just ashamed to even be here. I'm ashamed to be a part of a people who are so ignorant, ill-informed, unread, just generally dim-witted, that they buy into all of this stuff. It's really a disgusting situation.
Well, Mr. Maxwell,
we've been lied to from day one. I wouldn't be a bit surprised, and myself, it wouldn't surprise me a bit if bin Laden is now in Beverly Hills opening up a deli. We have no idea in the world what's going on. We've been told four different times by Washington, D.C., that bin Laden's been killed. Four different times, 2001, 2004, 2006, and now in 2011, he's been killed again. What is going on here?
He keeps coming back to life more often than a Democratic voter in Chicago,
yep.
Doesn't he?
Like a cat. Got more lives than a cat. I'm telling you. Now, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if 2 years from now they finally kill bin Laden and the next president, whoever that goofball paid like it would be, will come out and actually tell the American people that we finally killed bin Laden a fifth time. And then they'll all go back in behind the scenes afterwards and sit in the back room and laugh themselves to death because they're just smoking their cigars and laughing at the American people who buy this stuff. It's incredible what we have become in America. We are ignorant, ill-informed, unread, self-centered, egotistical. We can't read. We don't know how to think.
Well, Mr. Maxwell, I know that we only have a moment or two remaining, and I hope to just once again perhaps be able to set the stage for a future conversation. And I also know that it can be frustrating. You have looked directly into the heart of darkness for 50 years now, and the outlook can seem rather bleak, I think, but I'm encouraged, sir, as a result of your work and so many others like you who have had the fortitude to do just as you have, that so many young people now are awakened, and they've come into the world, many of them awakened, and I think that we still have a chance to get the ship turned if we have a chance. And that was probably a poor metaphor to use given our earlier conversation about ships.
Well, I appreciate the thought. You know, Abraham, who was it? George Washington supposedly had a dream. He wrote to some of his friends, and those letters are still available on archives. Handwritten letters from George Washington where he told some of his friends about a dream he had. Are you aware of that, the dream of George Washington?
Please tell me
Have
more.
Have you ever heard of it? Well, I've read this many times in different reference books about George Washington. Go back, go on the web and go to the library and get some information on the famous dream of George Washington that was given to him by God, so to speak. He was given a dream in which he said that in the dream an angel came to him and called him Son of the Republic. And they said, Son of the Republic, understand that there will come a time when your great republic will be covered in red, and it will be dying. It will be dying, it will be on its knees, and it will be in the process of dying, and it will be covered in red. Well, red is communism. And it will be covered in red.
Mm.
Son of the Republic, just know that there comes a day when your republic will be crawling on its knees in its last and final hours, and it will be covered in red. And only God will do something to save it. But there will come a time when the divine presence in the universe that men have called God will step in to do something to save the human race. Well, that's what we have today. The country is covered in red.
And unfortunately, we have run out of time, but I would like to say for our listening audience, where we've just been speaking about George Washington's dream, the new day to come, you can learn that and all the more at jordanmaxwell.com. Check out his resources available. Mr. Maxwell, it's been a privilege and an honor to have you on our program. Thank you so very much for the gracious allotment of time you provided. We hope that your research continues, guided by clarity and light.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Have safe travels until we talk.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Folks, you've listened to the maiden voyage of the USS Crimson Pill, assembling the pieces of the truth that it will require to help us avoid the dawn of the new day that George Maxwell has given us. Join us next week. We'll have our guests. We'll have pieces of truth. I have at least 50 subjects that will horrify you to your core. Join us next week. Thank you.